Welcome to La Liga Weekly. I complained that there weren't enough goals, so they gave us goals. Now my job is to focus on the good ones. En-Nesyri, Merici, El Bilal Touré, Bacice, Goodelli, and the bullet headers from Jimenez, Alvaro Rodriguez, David Garcia. And don't become fixated on the awful, awful goals. When I said I wanted goals, I meant in the other team's net. Was there some reverse goal of the season competition going on? Athletic Club scored two own goals. Real Sociedad lost to an own goal. Now, Bono and Gazzaniga, much acclaimed goalkeepers this season. What was going on? Next week, I just want some ordinary goals, please. Of course, the real stars of La Liga are the referees, as it should be. Take Elche. On target for a rare and much-needed victory, 2-0 against Betis, enter Javier Villanueva, who thinks to himself, wouldn't it be funny to randomly send off an Elche player? And he was right, it was hilarious. He then got ahead of steam and gave Betis three penalties and in total red-carded three Elche players. In the interest of balance, I should point out that Elche's players were also useless. And that one of their goals was a penalty, and one of the players red carded wasn't on the pitch. La Liga is unquestionably Europe leading in red cards, five times as many as the Premier League. 95 to 19 at my count. Stick that in your overseas TV packages. Anyway, Barca lost to Almeria. Can we get the hashtag Xavi out trending again, please? They're only 7 points clear now after the drawn Madrid derby with, you guessed it, a red card for Angel Correa. And the good news is Antonio Rudiger is out of danger and should make a full recovery. A footballer exaggerating injury, whatever next. Terry Gibson is here to make sense of it all, except the bits that don't make any sense because he's not a miracle worker. Do we start at the top, Terry? Can we start on Friday night? I know we've got the top two dropping points, which is, you know, which is a story, but we had three. I make it three insane games this weekend with three. There were 3-2 away wins. But I think just about Elche 2, Betis 3 tops the lot, doesn't it? So Elche, bottom of the league, doomed. Can they possibly overcome it? Can they rescue themselves? 2-0 up inside 10 minutes. Seem to be on their way to a victory. And then this inexplicable red card changes the game. And it just goes insane.
It was the second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, LJ, yeah, it was like 57 or something. Yeah,
yeah, got through to halftime, 2-0 up. And you're thinking, you're thinking they've got a chance to get the win here. This is at half-time, you're thinking this is a problem for Betis because not only were they 2-0 down, they were playing awful. There was no real sign of them piling the pressure on and getting back in the game. So the whole game flipped in the second half, and it is extraordinary. I mean, I was working on ITV game on the Madrid derby, and Guillaume came up with the stat after the game about, and I'd not thought about it until that point. And you do become accustomed, as in our analysis and our commentaries, that you treat La Liga different. So therefore, we'll go to the Angel Correa sending off. I immediately think, yeah, it's a red card because I'm used to that being a red card in Spain.
Yeah.
If I was working it on a Premier League game, majority of people would say yellow card. Yeah. You know, he's thrown his arm out. It's Rüdiger's acting. He's gone down. Yellow card. Get on with it. It's the sort of thing I did 3 or 4 times a match, but you just can't do it now. You're being grappled. You throw your arm out. It's not necessarily an elbow in the chest. But therefore, when I'm commentating on the game, I'm thinking, because I've become accustomed to the laws of the game in Spain, that's clearly going to be a red card. When you see it on VAR, it's clearly going to be a red card. And in this game, the referee I have no idea on any of those whether they were handballs. Mm. I mean, the one where Magallan gets sent off, it's a running action.
Yeah.
That strikes his arm. The referee didn't do the sending off. He wasn't going to do the sending off. And then VAR got involved and made him...
But then, look, yeah, compound it, though, by the red card, isn't it? Which is crucial. Because I don't think it was Fekir, wasn't it, who was running with the ball. He was running away from the goal. He was running diagonally away from the goal. Now, there was no one directly between him and the goal, but there were other players around. He wouldn't have...
It wasn't an obvious goal-scoring opportunity.
So not only is it a dodgy red card, a dodgy handball, because it's in his running action, and you sort of think, well, could he have done anything about that? I don't know. But also the red card, which then totally changes the game.
Yeah. All those handballs where they get booked, some of them, I don't think it's a booking. I really can't say that. It's an automatic booking. Why should it be?
Yeah.
When you've accidentally handballed, it's hit you from point blank.
You're not even looking. Yeah.
And your second, Rocco was second yellow, and he's off, sent off, suspended for next week. And he didn't go out there trying. In that action, he didn't try to handle the ball. Now we can debate, and we know the answer is if it strikes the arm and the ball, all that stuff that we. If the arm is elevated or it's outstretched and all that, and but I really don't see why it should be an automatic yellow card and further punishment. I really don't, and it's like the player must be thinking, "Well, 10 seconds ago, I was in this game and I've not gone out to handball anyone.
I was an innocent man,
and now I'm my team are down to on that occasion 9 players.
Yeah,
and it's something has to be done. I mean, we've talked about the amount of fouls that are given per game, which then means that. A totting up procedure where a player can easily pick up 2 yellows. And that's punishment in Spain is far easier to pick up in La Liga than it is anywhere else because of the sheer amount of fouls per game. And I become accustomed to it. So I see a player go down and I think, well, that's going to be a foul because of the laws in Spain. If I'm looking at it independently and thinking the laws of football, that's not a foul. But you just become accustomed to what you know is the decision is going to be, whether it's right or wrong. You just think, oh, yeah, he's touched him in the back. He's gone down. It's a foul. It's going to be probably another yellow card. And it shouldn't. It's something that La Liga really do need to look at because that stat on the sending off is just ludicrous.
Can I give you the others as well? So I count 95. You got 97. So we can't even quite.
Well, we said we're not sure whether players on the bench count that get sent off.
Because obviously there's a couple of those this weekend. I think I don't know is the answer to that. But if anyone knows, actually, in those red cards, you have to sort of go through and count them up again. You could just go through and count them. Yeah. Because there's not a match goes by where someone isn't sent off the bench, is there?
Yeah. Managers are getting suspended now for 5 yellows.
Yeah.
It's like, Xavi had a suspension the other week, didn't he, over 5 yellows? He hasn't been sent off, but it was, as a manager, how do you get 5 yellow cards? In the first half of the season.
Yeah, and it obviously doesn't work, does it, as a punishment, because they just keep on doing it. Other leagues, as this is all off FB Ref, so La Liga 95, the Prem 19, everything else is in between. Bundesliga 29, now they play fewer games. Serie A 40. And then Liga 74, so that is the only one getting anywhere near La Liga. It's interesting, because when you look at so many other stats in terms of goals scored and when they're scored and all of that, the leagues are really far more similar than we often give credit for. But in terms of the refereeing, that's a huge variation, isn't it? 5 times as many in the Premier League as you get in La Liga.
It's an issue when La Liga teams play in Europe as well.
Yeah.
Because they expect a foul because they're accustomed to having a foul given and then all of a sudden it's not. And then when you look at it, you think, I watched the Inter Milan Spurs game the other week and people were crashing in tackles and it was good. And I'm looking at it and thinking, oh, is that not a foul? And then, of course, I've been radicalised into thinking that's a foul when it's not. And you think, you do become so accustomed to watching La Liga and expecting a foul that when you watch another game of football and the tackles are flying in and they're not fouls, you're sort of astounded by it. And then you suddenly think, no, actually, it's not a foul. So why are we stopping the game? Hence the reason we have all this added on time at the end of matches. It's a major issue, I think, that needs to be addressed because the playing time, they tried to fix that by adding on 10 minutes at the end of each game. Let's get in line with the rest of Europe in terms of how referees in La Liga apply the laws of the game and what is a foul and what is not a foul, what's a booking, what's not a booking. The fourth officials have got to stop grassing up managers that have a moan under their breath. Because a lot of it is that, isn't it? A lot of it is. And I've been on the bench hundreds of times and you might not directly shout anything at the ref. You might curse about the ref to someone else on the bench. And the next thing you know, in La Liga, the fourth official is turning grass. He's grassing them up. It's like, oh, he said that about you and it's a yellow card or a red card. And you're thinking, and you can tell by the manager's behaviour that They're not aggressive. It's a curse in the heat of the moment that you're shouting, not directly at the referee or the assistant referee. It might be, you might turn around to the bench and say something. And then the fourth official who's standing in between waiting for a piece of the action calls the referee over and says, he swore at you. And off they go. Managers can't behave outside the laws of the game. We'll come to one of those managers further down the line. There's a technical area. Stay in the technical area. If they come out, that I'm all for punishing managers and coaches that are running up and down the touchline. If they're ranting and raving at the referee, fine. But in a lot of the cases, the referees are wasting time again by running halfway across the pitch to give a yellow card to a manager who's not in a particularly aggressive manner, but has obviously said something about the referee. And that's gosh. I mean, how can you pick up a suspension for 5 yellow cards in the first half of the season because the fourth official's getting far too busy? I'm watching the game Friday night. I'm thinking, I had to keep count of the score. I had to keep count of the penalties and keep count of how many players were on the pitch. The second half was absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And you think it just sums up LJ's season, where it's just nothing's going for them. And they've gone from 2-0 up, losing players, thinking they've got away with it when Iglesias misses an 88th minute penalty. Seconds later, there's I have another one. And in the 95th minute, William Jose steps up and takes one. And it is bonkers. It really is. It was a good watch. Don't get me wrong. But not if you're an Elche fan and you're looking at it and thinking, well, we're not going to win a game of football if this is how the laws are going to be applied. Our defenders are trying to block shots and block crosses. And I can't go through all the handballs and say, yeah, that was a handball, that's not a handball, because I have no idea anymore what constitutes a genuine handball, particularly in the penalty box. And in the case of Maggie, and he was outside the penalty box and still got sent off. So it was bizarre. It was comical. And a league like La Liga shouldn't have those issues, which make a game an absolute farce. And that was in the second half. Fair play to Betis. They kept going somehow. They managed to get the win in the end, and it puts them in a really good position. But it was a comical game of football.
Right. Imagine a 3-2 away win and a comical game of football. Shall we do another one?
Which one?
So shall we do Sevilla? You hinted at the behaviour of a manager.
Yeah.
So this one, as I was saying at the top, combination here of great goals, a red on the bench, great goals, and a ludicrous goal, and Osasuna get the win 3-2 away to Sevilla. I'm not going to make promises, but do your best to make some sense of it.
Yeah, I don't think the referee got too involved in this one, did he?
No, just the red card.
I'm looking at the outcome.
He was
substituted anyway. It was a great night for Fernando. He got the own goal and a red card when he was on the bench. Manhandled and thrown down the bench by Dimitrovic as well. he turns around. He was annoyed with the referee. He said something, obviously. But again, could that have just been sit down and get back in the bench? You know, now he's going to miss a game of football. And he didn't look particularly aggressive afterwards. He obviously moaned about something. And the fourth official got busy. He then wanted to continue it. Dimitrovic picked him up practically and threw him down the stairs for his own good. Otherwise, that was going to get even further punishment, I think, for Fernando. But the goals were great. David Garcia was a more than decent header.
Oh, excellent header. Player.
Excellent header. Super player as well. Cadelli's Thunderbolt, another one, with so much swerve on it as well. That was a spectacular effort. And Nesri's goal was good. Abde took his goal well as well for the winning goal in the 85th minute. But that the punch from Bono, which hit Fernando on the back, and the mishit punch, it lands, it hits the back of Fernando and just crawls over the line for Cadelli and clears it away. It was a manic game. Two teams who've heavily rotated for different reasons. So Sevilla played PSV on Thursday, so Sampaoli freshened it up. Arasati's team play Athletic Club on Wednesday in the Copa del Rey semi-final, so he made some changes to players that would normally play. But that's the good thing about Osasuna. They have a really balanced squad in terms of there isn't a huge deal of difference between the the first choice 11 and the next 7 or 8. So you're never really sure. So it doesn't weaken Osasuna when they do make changes. And they were good. They were positive. They actually did something I'm probably going to accuse Atletico Madrid of not doing. Osasuna realised that Sevilla played on Thursday. They realised that they were making changes. And Osasuna, not being a great runner form, was so positive in their approach. They went for Sevilla. They went and closed them down quickly. They played with real tempo, real determination. And they made the most of the fact they were playing against an opposition that were might, you know, need sort of half an hour to get into the game. You know, shake the game off on Thursday, the travelling back from Holland and all that. So fair play to Osasuna. But it was a terrific game of football. I thought Sevilla were going to win it when they got back to 2-2. And then they mess up royally for the defending for the last goal, and Abde took his goal really well. So it's but I talked about the manager out. I'm mesmerised by his behaviour during a game. I shouldn't be. I don't know why. There's so much action going on. But he's miles out of his technical area. He bumps into the assistant referee on numerous. The assistant referee is running up and down the line and bumps into Sam Carlo.
Oh, it's so annoying. Yeah.
Outside the technical area, either nearly on the pitch or right down near the corner flag.
Mm.
And he went through the whole wardrobe change, didn't he? I don't think I'd ever wear a beanie in my life if I lived in Sevilla, a beanie hat. And I've got a bald head, just like Sam Paoli. It is never cold enough in Sevilla to wear,
wear a hat. His whole backroom staff had them on.
Exactly. That's the point I was going to make, that I would never have to wear one.
Hmm.
And he had the beanie hat on and the bomber jacket with a big fur coat, which looked rather weird. Then both of them came off and then the bomber jacket went back on. There's three wardrobe changes during a match. So he's so manic and chaotic, he doesn't even know what to wear during the 90 minutes, let alone what he's shouting at the referee and the assistant referee and the players and the substitutions. It's quite exhausting watching Sevilla. There's always chaos, far too much chaos. Mm. They have really good quality. They need a coach that in this current run of form. Their average has been pretty decent, just to be calm, and then you watch Ancelotti on the bench and his team are losing 2-0 at Liverpool and they come back and win 5-2. His expression and mannerisms don't change at all during that period. Could you imagine Sam Powell if his team were 2-0 down and come back to win 5-2 at Liverpool? It'd literally explode. And I just look at Sevilla and they're great fun to watch because it is so chaotic, but there's substitutions all over the place and player changes all over the place and this manic manager running up and down the touchline. It's a good watch if you're not a Sevilla fan. If you're a Sevilla fan and you're watching, you're thinking everything is so, it's just tiring watching them. But it was a really good game and credit to Osasuna. It was another good result. And they're in great shape, 33 points. They're a team that maybe not at the start of the season, you're thinking, which is going to be interesting. They normally finish 10th, 11th, around that position. They probably will do again this year. But there's always the possibility that if things don't go according to plan, then they might get dragged into a relegation dogfight without going down, but get dragged into the bottom half. But they don't. They have tough little periods of the season, but with their personality and the quality, they get out of those runs pretty quick and go along really nicely.
Where at Sevilla, just last week, you were saying, oh, they'll be mid-table soon, it'll be fine.
Yeah. They're
2 points above the relegation zone again.
Exactly. I mean, and it's they've gone on this good run of form at home. So that was a big disappointment last night that they weren't able to get all 3 points against Osasuna. And, yeah, they're because of the results from some of the other teams down the bottom. And that's going to happen now because there's so many teams involved, they're going to be playing each other. So on quite a frequent basis, so there's these relegation battles we're looking at, and then other teams like Girona picking up 3 points. I mean, Valladolid had a good run. They've been dragged back into it again. Not that they were ever out of it. Celta got a big win this week. Cadiz got a big win against Rayo. Espanyol got a win against Mallorca. So all the teams at the bottom, and of course Valencia got the win. So all those teams at the bottom that pick wins up, when you think you're on a decent run and you're getting away from it and you're thinking if Sevilla had won last night, they would have gone to 28 points and been almost pushing Osasuna, almost pushing towards Mallorca, not many miles away from Rayo. Suddenly with the wins that the other teams get and the defeat for Sevilla plunges them right back in trouble again.
Hmm.
Atletico Madrid next week as well.
Yes, yeah. Let's do the other 3-2, shall we? It's weird how it goes, isn't it? So Girona won 3-2 in Bilbao. They were in front earlier. So I think that was a good finish, wasn't it? Borja Garcia early on in the game.
Alex Garcia. Yeah, that's
sorry,
a really
good
goal.
Sorry,
And Girona come on the back and that's 6-2 last week against Almeria, where they played some really good stuff and some of their goals were really good. They continued that early in the fourth minute with a good build-up, nice finish, good positive play from Girona, to be honest, and gutsy play, to be fair. Their away record isn't great. Gutsy in the fact that they know they concede goals, but they fancy themselves to score. And that's exactly how they set out this game against opponents, again, who had the Copa del Rey on Wednesday against Osasuna on their mind. And Girona had a positive outlook, a front foot attitude, and paid off really early in the game.
And two own goals in this one, wasn't it?
Of which neither player knew anything about, did they? Yeah. It was like, oh, it's deflected, it's hit me, and it's gone in. The first one from DeMarcos, the third goal, which ultimately proved to be the winning goal from Mikel Vesca. I think he got deflection before it hits him, and he knows very little about it. And excellent strike from Uribechiche. Don't know why he doesn't score more, because he really does whack a ball. When he catches it, he should be shooting more. And Raul Garcia's goal was bizarre as well, wasn't it? The back pass to Gazzaniga. Awful touch. My argument on this is that defenders are far too happy at times to go to the goalkeeper. And sometimes it's to clear up a mess that they're creating. And I think that was the case in this. It was the defender should have... He's trying to play his way out the back. There isn't an obvious pass. So he, in my opinion, I think he should just go long, put it down the channel. You know, you're winning a game of football. You're in a good position. Don't take the risk. But he didn't. He turns and goes back to the goalkeeper. He plays just like a square pass across the six-yard box, doesn't he? And the goalkeeper clearly doesn't want it. It takes every touch and Raul Garcia thumps in the top corner. But it was too little, too late. But I think there is a tendency now for the modern-day central defender or defender to go back to the goalkeeper. They all, you know, the goalkeepers are, they're, some are better than others with the ball at their feet. But I don't think any of them relish a square pass across the six-yard box with people closing them down, and you've got to have an immaculate first touch to get the ball away.
It was all too close, that one, wasn't it? I get it as an outlet. If you're under pressure and the keeper's got more space than you have, and the pitches are really good, aren't they? Go back to him and he can kick it up the pitch. Fair enough. But yeah, it was a chaotic scene in the penalty area, wasn't it? And he thought, I could kick it out of play, but I'll kick it to the goalkeeper, who then made an absolute hash of his touch. Was awful, and it popped up in the air, didn't it?
It was like he was furious that they'd been given the ball in the first place. So he was angry at the player for passing it to him and lost concentration on his touch. He must have, must have been thinking, don't give me it. Oh, you give me the ball. And then he's had a touch and it's got away from him and the goal. But it didn't cost him in the end. Really good. Girona, really good. That's what I'm talking about, Sevilla. Yeah. Girona have gone up to 30 points now. And you're looking at the 40-point total. And there's a few teams now that are getting close. You're thinking, well, they'll get another two or three wins. The likes of Mallorca and Girona, maybe another two or three wins, and they're going to be safe. So it's a real dogfight down there. But slowly but surely, one or two of the teams are finding some wins. They're winning games, maybe in the case of Girona, that you didn't think they would. But there are other teams where you're thinking, well, that's a winnable game. This is something you've got to get something from in this game. Espanyol, for instance, Cadiz at home to Rayo, those sort of ones. And then we get the ones where two rivals in the same position in that relegation dogfight will be playing each other. So plenty of excitement down the bottom. Of course, you know, it's Valencia getting the win. That's put the cat amongst the pigeons. Great atmosphere in that game. They fought like lions, didn't they? Like tigers to get the win. Baraka had the desired impact, and they probably deserve that. Real Sociedad double pull. And as you said, another own goal, Zubimendi, who actually, I'm a big fan. He played poorly in this game, as did most of the Real Sociedad team. They didn't really liven up. They didn't really show any threat in attack. You know, one or two complaints about the injured players missing, but they're actually getting them back now. Oyarzabal is back. Mikel Merino has been injured. He's back. I think David Silva is the obvious one that's they're hoping to get back soon. So that was a blow for Real Sociedad, to be honest. And when you look at the results around them, it's put Betis back in the frame. But Valencia, that was all about getting the 3 points. And Samuelino in particular played really well, missing important players themselves. But I think Hugo Jura was in tears, wasn't he, at the end of the game in a league match where the pressure has been getting to the Valencia players that much. It's the third manager in the space of a month. Pressure on the players, a home game against a really good team. And that you could see that how much stress they were under with the fact that Hugo Jura gets quite emotional, had to be picked up and lifted off the pitch at the end of the game. So, yeah, excellent win for Valencia.
We're quite a long way into the podcast. We haven't discussed Real Madrid or Barcelona yet, even though neither of them won. Shall we? Shall we do the Madrid derby? And also for regular podcast listeners, we haven't discussed the Liverpool game yet, have we? So
No.
let's discuss both of those Real Madrid performances. So let's briefly, so the game at Liverpool. I mean, not everyone's seen it because of how TV rights work. Oh, we'll have a moan about TV rights later if we ever and
Yeah.
not being shown later. Yeah, we'll do that later. Anyway, so Real Madrid and a brilliant, ruthless performance against Liverpool on Tuesday, having, as you said, having been 2 goals down, just that knowledge, that calm, that experience that they bring, seemingly in the Champions League to an extraordinary degree in that game.
Yeah, and it's the mentality of the players, and I mean, and the manager. I mean, at 2-0 down, I'm sitting there, oof, I didn't expect this, and and not only was it 2-0, it looked like it was going to be more at that stage. You know, every time Liverpool went forward, there was either an error by a Real Madrid player, or it looked like it was going to finish with an attempt at goal by Liverpool. Courtois makes a mistake, and think, well, that's unlike him. You know, how messy is this going to be for Real Madrid? Are they going to have any chance in the second leg of pulling anything back if they then go on and concede the third and the fourth? And it takes real mental strength to shake that off, not have a manager on the touchline who's going absolutely berserk, and to work your way slowly but surely back into the game to the extent that they get, you know, Vinicius gets a wonder goal. And then Alisson makes a similar mistake to Courtois, and you're back on level terms, and it's everything's back to normal. And then in the second half, they were awesome. They just blew Liverpool away. There was an element of how poor Liverpool were, I think, and how mentally they reacted after being 2-0 up and absolutely flying to suddenly being pulled back to 2-1. They didn't handle that well. Then going in at half time level, they handled it really poorly in the second half and allowed Real Madrid to you know, stroll away to victory. It's interesting, actually, when you see the mentality of Real Madrid, and there's some new players in this squad who have just got on board with it straight away. And then you see Casemiro and Varane at Manchester United, and you see that it's not just the quality they've got, it's that winning mentality. And players have it, players don't. It grows with a player as they belong to a club like Real Madrid and they're used to winning trophies. They still celebrate as if it's their first trophy. That winning mentality and not panicking is really impressive, and that's what held Real Madrid in good stead in this. And I don't think the tie is wrapped up yet. I think there's, but I can't see any other outcome than Real Madrid going through. But they've got to be tied in. They will. You know, for straight away you're thinking Liverpool got to score four, and Real Madrid not score. Well, I think the chances of Real Madrid scoring are pretty high.
Oh, three,
So,
three, three would do it, wouldn't it? And to get it to extra time. So,
yeah. So I yeah. I mean, it's there were games Chelsea last year, wasn't it? Real Madrid having one, and then having to rescue it in the dying moments of the Bernabeu to get past Chelsea when it looked like the tie was done after the first leg. So a little bit of work to do. Tidy. They've got to tidy it up. They've just got to make sure they're nice and tidy. But so then going on to the game against Atletico. One or two changes, which you'd expect. I mean, the schedule they've got, the changes really don't have a massive impact as long as certain players are playing. I think Benzema is the clear example of that, and maybe Modric, but you can't keep chucking Modric out every 3 days and expect the same, you know, level of performance. So, and there's nothing in terms of selection from Ancelotti, which you could disagree about, the quality in midfield. So why not rotate it? And it was, it did look like a performance where they'd played the game against Liverpool and it took them a while to get into the game. And that's where I felt the failure of Atletico was, in the fact that they didn't try to take advantage of that. They had a 5 minute burst at the start of the game, and then dropped back and got deeper and got bodies back behind the ball. And you're looking at the formation. I had read that Llorente was going to play up front with Griezmann. I'm finding that those partnerships up front a little bit weird from Simeone, in the fact he's got Morata and Memphis on the bench, but he chose to play Griezmann as the centre-forward on his own. He doesn't get enough touches of the ball when he plays up front as the main striker. And it was a 4-5-1, 5-4-1. It was hard to really pick out what the formation was for Atletico Madrid, apart from bodies back behind the ball and try and get forward and get the ball to Griezmann, it becomes isolated. So they didn't take the game. But in the context of the season, a draw away from home against Real Madrid for Atletico in their competition is this year, top four, is a decent result. So I kind of don't want to lump in on Simeone and say playing for a draw away at Real Madrid. It's not the worst thing in the world. The outcome suited them. They got the point. In the context of the season, it's a really good point. But I did feel there was a possibility of Atletico, because I value the quality that Atletico have. This isn't an Atletico team that should be going there and only thinking about the draw. I value the quality that they have. It's not always picked, but I think that maybe they could have been a bit more adventurous, bearing in mind Real Madrid's schedule recently, the game against Liverpool, a Clasico midweek in the Copa del Rey. I thought there was a possibility that Atletico could have gone a little bit more front foot particularly in the first half of the game. But I think the draw was a fair result in the end. Different styles of play, obviously. And I think Atletico dug in. And when they went 1-0 up, down to 10 men, I must admit, I anticipated that they would hang on, because there wasn't a lot coming from Real Madrid. Benzema in particular looked, as he is, a 35-year-old who's struggling to play every 3 or 4 days. I think that's an issue. He wasn't at his sharpest. So it was a hard-fought point, I think, for Real Madrid in the end. You can never write them off.
A couple of brilliant headers. I love a good headed goal. Brilliant, isn't it, to score a good header?
Yeah. Yeah, the terrible defending from Real Madrid on the first one. They're in a zone. They're in a line. Probably the best header of the ball. Jimenez is starting 10 yards probably away from them. And I think zonal marking is one thing, but I think when you've got a player like that who's going to end up in the box, you could take out one of those zonal players and go and mark him and block his run.
Block the run.
Get touch tight. Don't make it as easy for Griezmann to chip it up in the air and Jimenez to be on the run. It ended up with the youngster, didn't it? Alvaro Rodriguez, who was the closest to him. But when Jimenez has got he's on the march, he's got a good run up and a jump, and the cross is excellent. And it was a delightful header, really good header from Jimenez. So he didn't start the game. I mean, it's one of those where you're thinking he should be. Hermoso got the nod alongside the always suspended and red carded Savage. Dreadful injury to Reinildo, which meant a shuffle around. Jimenez then comes on and plays his part. And just when you think they're going to win it, Alvaro Rodriguez pops up with it was like an En-Nesyri header. I mean, you could say it was a Ronaldo-type header. But the run he got, and again, that's poor defending from Atletico. The subs come on. He's a really tall player. Someone has to take responsibility there in the defensive setup. But they didn't really pick him up. Everyone had a marker. He was unmarked. But what a fantastic header. I'm like you. I like the headers where we underestimate the skill of heading as well. You know, it can be one good thing when you say, oh, he's good in the air. In what way? He's big and tall and he jumps and he wins the headers. But I think it's a technique. I played with players that were, you know, didn't win all their headers. But if it was within reach, they're either powerful or skillful. It's a technique. Heading technique, the glance, the powerful header back across goal. It's and those two headers were sensational. Both the, I mean, anything less than those two headers,
yeah,
anything that goes down the middle of goal,
yeah,
the goalkeeper save. But so to glance it in the way they both did was super.
Who's the best header of a football that you can remember in any of the ways that, you know, as in terms of winning everything or in terms of the ability of, you know, the skill in the header? Someone asked me and I couldn't think.
Yeah, there was players. Do you remember Gary Speed had a really good reputation?
Yeah, yeah. Tim Cahill as well.
Tim Cahill, another one. It doesn't. Yeah. You don't necessarily have to be Peter Crouch, who's clearly going to be good in the air.
Yeah.
But players that were, I played with a player called Garth Crooks, who he's not much bigger than me, but his heading skills were fantastic. With all of those skills, we just talked about the power and the, and we used to train on heading a lot when we were younger. There was a underneath the stand at the old White Hart Lane, there was a rope with a leather ball on it that had been there years probably, and it used to swing from under the thing, and it was part of our development, as you know, you sort of 15 of you line up and take turns running to head the ball and stuff like that, which different techniques needed for different things. Centre halves, their skills is in clearing the ball as far away as they can. Strikers, you need those different types of skills, the glancing header, the flick on, you know, the powerful header, the downward header. Probably something that isn't coached as much as it used to be, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, and there's an upside to that, in all honesty, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of head injuries, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the, I don't necessarily think it's stuff that happens in the game, except if you get kicked in the head or blow a clash of heads. It's the endless practicing, isn't it, that footballers used to do, you know.
I guess Ronaldo would be one of them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
His head ability, not just the ability to climb higher, but his skill with heading as well. He's some of the spectacular goals. Gareth Bale was good.
Yeah,
in the air as well. His heading was a feature of his game that was often overlooked. There was a period where Real Madrid were really good at crossing balls into the box, and likes of Benzema, Ronaldo, and Bale were climbing and winning headers and scoring goals. So it's an important aspect of the game. But I do take your point. I mean, heading the ball did hurt sometimes. Mm. You know, if you caught one wrong. A near post flick that had been driven into you, and you got to flick it on. You felt like you'd been scalped sometimes.
Yeah, well, I didn't like kicking the when the goalkeeper kicked the ball, and you were expected to head it as a central defender. I just didn't like it. You know, which is one of the reasons I wasn't good enough at football. But you know, I just thought, oh, I don't know, I might just let him win it. It won't make any difference to the overall.
Yeah, don't worry, John. We'll edit this bit.
Oh, I'm honest, you know. Got a degree, Terry. You know, that's because I didn't have too many footballs, you know. anyway, let's move on, shall we, and do Almeria 1, Barcelona 0. So again, we discussed this with the Patreons, patreon.com/LTL. So Barca knocked out by Manchester United on Thursday out of Europe by February, which is, you know, embarrassingly early. But the safety blanket of La Liga was not available to them this week because they were poor against Almeria, who scored a good goal and got a much-needed win for them.
El Blau Touré, the link-up play between him and Luis Suarez, terrible defending from Barcelona. Didn't get close in any event. El Blau Touré rushes through and one-on-one and thunderous finish. And they deserved the lead at that time. Almeria, this is the team that got beat 6-2 at Girona the week before, and then you're looking at this game and thinking, well, it's 7-point gap. Barcelona, Barcelona will win this game and take it to 10. And then I was going to be interested in seeing what the response would be. I think Real Madrid would have competed, take it to the Clásico in La Liga, see the outcome of that. Then if they were still in the Champions League, then I was thinking, if Barcelona do win this game against Almeria and avoid defeat in the Clásico, then I would imagine that Real Madrid might, their focus will be on the Champions League again, which would be a help because they're big players, wouldn't have to play every 3 days and wouldn't have to keep playing, and you could save Modric, you could rotate Benzema and one or two others. And then Barcelona put in their worst performance of the season. I understand Xavi making the changes, probably thinking still that this should be enough. But it just goes to show, if you're not playing football on a regular basis and you're sat on the bench and you're called upon, then your mindset is, well, doesn't fancy me anymore anyway, see, competence takes a hit. Then you're asked to come in and do a job, and you're physically, you're not sharp, you're not up to it. And it was a dreadful performance. One shot on target from the substitute, 18-year-old Alakon, right towards the end of the game. Loads of crosses into the box. Lewandowski isn't looking a threat at this moment in time, I have to be honest. Pedri is a massive miss when he doesn't play. And a team that defended deep, having scored the goal relatively early, defended deep, were happy to defend deep, happy to defend crosses. It was quite a comfortable win in the end for Almeria, to be honest. Far too comfortable. So, you know, Barcelona had to resort to putting Araujo up front and chilling the ball into the box and hoping to score a header. And it didn't happen. So it's put the race back on, I have to be honest. And Real Madrid will be grateful. They don't want to be focusing purely on the Champions League or the Copa del Rey, because that could go either way in their tie. But I think if Barcelona had won this and gone 10 clear and avoid defeat in the Clásico in a couple of weeks' time, then move, you know, maybe 10, 11, 12 games to go and the gap could be 10 points, then Ancelotti might have thought, well, you know, we've got this game in the Champions League coming up. I'll rest some in this league game and that league game and stuff like that. And so this is how critical this win was for Barcelona. And their attitude didn't reflect that. And it was a great opportunity for them to go 10 clear. And, you know, now it's 7, the Clásico coming up. If Real Madrid can win that, look how quick it's changed. So if there's more points dropped by Barcelona, Real Madrid are on their, you know, on their tails again. So it's a really bad defeat, actually, for Barcelona.
Three of Barca's next 6 games are Clásicos now, because we've got Copa del Rey first leg Thursday night, which is not currently scheduled to be on telly in the UK or Ireland, but we've done our best, Terry, and we have mentioned it to the broadcasting organisations that we know, and we'll see. I mean, it's extraordinary. The whoever handles it for the Spanish FA doesn't seem to make any effort to sell it. Because,
and they're two good semi-finals as well. It's not just the Clásico.
Yeah.
The other one is Osasuna against Athletic Club.
Yeah.
Massive rivalry. We know they will be two good games. Now, everyone would switch on and will prefer to watch the Clásico. But, we haven't been able to watch any of it so far. And now there's a Clásico involved. I understand that TV companies in the UK are interested in putting it on, but haven't been able to come to a deal with whoever's selling the rights for, it's not La Liga, it's the Federation. So hopefully something can get done. And we can sit back and watch the two games here in the UK.
But it's extraordinary. You mention it to people and they just have not been, you would have thought if you've got that product to sell, you would actually be ringing people.
Yeah.
You'd have some network of contacts of people in TV rights acquisition departments and be mentioning it to them. But apparently not. Anyway. So that's Thursday. So Patreons will find a way of watching it. Terry keeps having, you keep having to get your laptop sorted out, aren't you? So we'll see. We'll see.
We're entitled to try and find it. If it's not available in your own country, then I want to watch it. I want to watch both games.
Yeah.
So I will somehow see it, but I would rather, you know, do it legally.
Yeah.
Don't grass me up. Don't be a Fulton Fisher on me, anyone listening.
Right. So there we are. So, massive game coming up. And let's crack on through the rest. So, just checking the rest. So, they're all in some way in the relegation battle, aren't they? So, Celta Vigo, you sort of mentioned this, but very good from Celta Vigo. Lovely finish from Seferovic. First goal for them, wasn't it? He's a funny player, isn't he? He's such a patchy player. There are times you think, he's good, isn't he? And then and then you suddenly look at him and think, he hasn't scored for like 3 years or something.
I agree totally. There is a player there. I remember him from Real Sociedad, but he was exactly the same. He's been like that throughout his career. He's got quality, he's got talent. Who knows? This might be the club. I think he's only on loan. This might be the club that gets it out of him on a regular basis, because they play good football. That might suit him. So it's an important win for Celta. They've been playing really well, but not getting the results. And you kind of felt, well, how long is this going to continue? Why they're going to suffer And then, you know, they came good in this game. They thumped Valladolid. Gabri Veiga is obviously a talent that's getting better and better. And, you know, he's going to be hard for Celta to keep. I think there's a big enough buyout clause in to stop other Spanish clubs buying him.
Right.
But not other clubs in other places in Europe.
Yeah.
Notably the Premier League. He's an attacking midfielder, scores goals.
Yeah.
Good player. Not particularly. I still think he's an attacking midfielder that needs to improve on his defensive responsibilities if he's going to be a midfield player. But when you're on top, he's got the ability to create and to score goals.
Yeah, that's his heat map there. So
yeah.
Going that way, obviously, you can't see this on the podcast. So, so attacking midfielder, right side of
I'd say in a midfield three is fine. In a midfield two, which he was in this game, it's touch and go. But if you're on top and you've got the ball and you're attacking, he's a massive threat. Two good goals, both in and around the penalty box. And that's what he does. He certainly has clearly come to the attention of other big clubs around Europe because he's a really talented player. I wouldn't be surprised to see him called up in the Spain squad in the near future. So a lot of good young players in La Liga, and he's one of the best, to be honest.
Yeah. Two more games to discuss. Obviously, there's Villarreal Getafe to come Monday night. Which is a huge game, so we'll try and remember to discuss the Monday night game for the patrons this week. So Cadiz won. I think that's three home wins in a row, if I remember rightly. Guardiola with the goal against Rayo. Funnily enough, a red card again in this game, Terry.
Yep, there was a red card in the Valladolid one as well. Selim Amalha, who's never a red card. It was a yellow. It was a clear yellow. And the same, I can't recollect Catena's red card in this one. It seems ages ago. No, Guardiola had this. Actually, Guardiola had a few chances, and you thought he's not going to score. When he goes through, you think don't fancy him, and he did score. But Cadiz surprisingly actually deserved this win. Rayo weren't at their best. Cadiz deserved a win. Their run they've gone on I'm sure I've mentioned it before. But the team that didn't score or get a point in the first five games of the season. Now you're looking at So 18 games since that run, and it took them a while to get going. They picked up a point. They started scoring a goal or two. But in the 18 games since, they've got 25 points.
Yeah.
And that's really, really impressive. They were on the verge of being Elche. We could have had two. And Levante last season. When you go for the first five games of the season, you lose all five and you don't score a goal, you're in trouble. And if you don't shake that off, which Elche weren't able to do, Levante took half a season last year for them to get a win. Cadiz could easily have gone down that road of, you know, feeling sorry for themselves. But Sergi has got them going. They've worked hard in the winter transfer window. And it's going to be a long haul for them. They're not out of trouble yet. And I think they'll go right to the end of the season, still there or thereabouts. But that run of form of 25 points in 18 games is really impressive.
Four wins in eight games, isn't it? So it's a good, particularly good.
Their home
good
form
run,
is
it?
Good. Guardiola coming in is a decent signing.
Two and two.
Decent. Yeah, so they now look younger and sharper and better in attack. And it was a good win against a team that we all admire for what they've done this season.
And Espanyol got an important win as well. They're looking much healthier now in the league, aren't they? 2-1 win over Mallorca. And actually, I was going to say typical of the weekend in terms of this, an awful goal and then a really good goal and a good finish. Two goals from Brathwaite, and a lovely finish from Marici. And a typical modern goal, the first one, wasn't it? Where Mallorca are playing
square
out.
Square pass, yeah. Square pass, across the back of your defence and cut out. And it was an easy finish for Brathwaite in the end. And Marici's goal was sensational. For the old big guy, finesse, that first touch, and it was a lovely first time clip with his left foot towards the goalkeeper's left in the top corner. He was beating all ends up. But no, that was a massive win. And Brathwaite, Hosseluu's coming back from injury, he was on the bench. So I think Diego Martinez is showing his worth now.
Mm.
You know, he was helped by the transfer window. They did spend a bit of money. And I just wish there was more supporters at Espanyol. I don't get it. Why behind the goal in particular, fill that up, move people about. Don't have that empty bit behind the goal that makes it awful.
Or reduce ticket prices. If your seats are empty, your prices are too high. I think it's as simple as that with a football team.
It's a big city, Barcelona. I know Espanyol, the smaller club, but you know, to get 15,000-20,000 into a La Liga game shouldn't be too difficult. But no, Espanyol, Diego Martinez is really they're in the right on the right track now.
How good is Marici? Is he? I'll just check his age. He's late mid twenties. Yeah. I'll find out the exact number. That'd be easiest, wouldn't it?
I think he's really good, John. I didn't know much about him before.
He's 28.
He's had a varied career in terms of got big move, but wasn't playing on a regular basis. And from day one, he kept them up last season. I mean, he was the reason they stayed up. When they signed him, he was on loan. It was a big signing, important signing for Mallorca. And then they were able to get him for about 7 or 8 million euros. I think great value for money. Big money for Mallorca. And it's paying off. He is the focal. He dictates the way they play because he does everything you want your centre forward to do, and you play in the style. Probably Aguirre has looked at it and thought, well, I've got this big guy up front who's really good at this, he's really good at that, I'm going to build a team around him. And he does enough in terms of his achievements to warrant that, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got your other players, Kangin Lee, and players like Danny Rodriguez, and people on the move in and about him. They can be hard-working, they can be solid at the back, play the three centre-backs. I know they lost in this game, but then you get the ball forward and he'll hold it up. Then those players can join him with the attack. And you know, he does get his team up the pitch. He gets in the end of the crosses. With the three centre-backs and Marici, they're threat of attacking set pieces. That's four big players. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a coup for Mallorca to have bought him.
Yeah.
And it'll be a coup if they keep him again in the summer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So what level would he go to?
I could look at teams in the Premier League, to be honest.
It's a style of play, isn't it?
Job for.
Yeah, because you need to be prepared to play with a big guy, don't you? Is the way of looking.
Yeah, he's not just head on the stick either. I mean, his goal at the weekend.
Yeah,
he clips a lot. If people haven't seen it, try and find it. It's a lovely clip, skillful clip. He's got a good first touch. He's strong. Really strong. A really strong player. So centre-halves tend to try to get tired and then give up and, you know, just let him have the ball because he's so powerful that they can't get round him, they can't get over him and can't go through him. So I think he's got a lot to offer. Hopefully Mallorca could keep him when he continues in La Liga. But at that price, I don't know what his buyer is, but that profile of striker are few and far between now.
Yeah, yes. Right, I think we'll leave it there, Terry. So, Copa del Rey coming up in midweek. Osasuna Athletic play Wednesday and then the Clásico Thursday and then another round of La Liga games with some fascinating games next weekend. We'll be back with everybody to discuss all of those games then. So, thank you very much for everybody and we'll see you soon.